The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. There's a saying, think globally, act locally. On today's show, we're going to look at an example of that. There's a proposal in the Canadian Parliament to decriminalize simple possession of most drugs, Bill C-216. On Monday, May 16th, the City Council of Brandon, Manitoba, heard about that bill and about the local harm reduction network in a presentation by local resident Kim Longstreet.
So my son's 10-year struggle with substance use hasn't been an easy one. Overdoses have happened to him in the latter part of his substance use disorder due to an unsafe supply of drugs in our community. If I polled council members right now, I'm sure that you would all say you have used your possible drug of choice, alcohol, in a safe place like a bar or a lounge. Question to consider is, why can't the other substance users have the same courtesy of a safe supply for the drugs they use? Back in July 2017, I brought to City Council of that time many concerns about the lack of resources and services in our community for persons struggling with a substance use disorder. 5 years later, and we are nowhere near meeting the need of our addictions crisis. I'm hopeful that another 5 years doesn't pass us by, resulting in more unnecessary pleas for help and the deaths that arise from not getting that help. Bill 217. It's a bill that is put forward by MLA Bernadette Smith. She's with the NDP. Manitoba is the only province in Canada that is not transparent about its overdose deaths or stats. On the federal government website, you will find all the provinces listed, and Manitoba is the only one with not applicable in all of its columns. My guess as to why the stats are not relayed in a transparent and time-friendly manner is because to do so would actually tell the truth about where our province is and its efforts to address our addiction crisis. Having this truth brought to light would mean that more effort and funding is required to effectively address the issues each day. Each day that the issue remains under the carpet is another day that a family member loses a loved one to an unnecessary death. My son is in recovery in Winnipeg at the moment. It's been a year since he's accessed the services at the Bruce Oak Recovery Center. And they've worked with him a lot to give him many opportunities to deal with the reasons for his substance use disorder. As he heals, he gets more passionate about educating people and has taken it upon himself to collect signatures for this petition. If he thought I was a force to be reckoned with, I think he will be a bigger one once he gets through this learning time in his life. I can say definitively that our community has experienced overdose deaths and near misses at a rate that is much too high for a community of our size. I have partaken in saving the life of someone that I was overdosing. Thankfully, I have never had to do that life-saving measure on my son, and I feel for anyone that has ever been put in that position. Bill 216. In 6 years, 27,000 people in Canada have died of an overdose. That's 4,500 per year, 12 per day, or one per hour. Our current drug policy has proven to be ineffective in the prevention of substance use and the war on drugs. Sorry. I do get emotional when I talk about drugs and the effect it has on people because I am still in the throes of it, and my son finding his way, and I'm passionate about these two bills. The war on drugs has resulted in widespread stigma towards those who use controlled substances. The war on drugs has allowed organized crime to be the sole provider of substances. Problematic substance use is a health issue and is not resolved through criminalizing personal possession and consumption. Decriminalization of personal possession is associated with dramatically reducing drug toxicity. Deaths in the countries that have modernized their drug supply. Substance use is a normal part of human experience, documented across centuries and all over the world. So the petition now is there. They want to reform the drug policy. They want to provide a path forward for convictions. Of course, we're looking for a safer supply, and we're calling on the Government of Canada to support Bill C-216. The Harm Reduction Network. The invitation to establish this network was sent out to the community on February 5th, 2020, and of course I joined. In the 2 years, Salon Machado, the network coordinator, has brought awareness about harm reduction to the forefront of our community. Full credit goes to Solange and her work to get the network set up and for establishing a peer group and doing a survey that brings attention to our community's addiction crisis. There's the three things that they had hoped to achieve. Before I go on to this portion, I just wanted to say that we are going to be doing another survey in the very near future, and that one's going to focus on a quieter addiction in our community, which is opioids. It's the one that people cannot visibly see happening in our community, but continues to cause concern. And that is, of course, the addiction to the illicit drug, which is opioids. I want to share with you something that is happening in our community. It's happening for a few years now. It's called farm parties. It's our youth in our community taking pharmaceuticals from parents or whoever they can get it from. They put it on a bowl in the middle of a table in a party, and they take them and they drink and they tell each other how they're feeling. This is a thing, and it's happening in our community. So this specific survey was done with 50 people who are part of the peer group who openly use and say they use. So this was not a hard survey to do. The harder survey to do is going to be the opioids and the stigma that surrounds people who use that drug and the need for them to keep silent so they do not get the backflack that I got when I came forward with my concerns. So again, I'm not going to go through every single slide. I know council was given this ahead of time. I think what is interesting about this particular slide is the use is mostly by Indigenous people, and that is not something new. That's a known fact. The next slide talks about employment, cell phones, which is a really important part of having people who use, having a way to communicate outwards. As you can see, not a lot have that or can afford to have that or have that at their disposal. So the respondents, 90 male or female, 92, the age between 25 and 45, I said the Indigenous, and we talked about the employment. This next one shows what resources have they accessed in the last 6 months. And, when this survey was being done, there was lots of conversation around people utilizing services and how they were feeling about utilizing those services, and a lot of negativity. There's a lot of people who say they will never set foot in a hospital again, they'll never set foot in 7th Street Health Access again, or such and such and such, just because of the way they were treated. My philosophy is you treat somebody the first time like you treat them the 100th time you've seen them. Next slide talks about usage, disposal, where, again. Maybe an eye-opener to some, but not to those of us who are on the streets, about where people are using and where sharps are getting dropped. Talking about what sort of things were people using, picking up from 7th Street Health Access or wherever their point of contact was. Talked about safe consumption site, and this past summer, a pop-up site, a safe injection site, popped up in Winnipeg during an event, was very well attended, and was not okayed. The people who organized it just did it just to see how it would go, and it went very, very well. And, we're hoping maybe to see more of that later. Overdose. So, again, a disturbing slide. When asked if they have overdosed, 24% yes. Asked if they overdosed by accident, 18%. My slides are very small. When asked in the last 6 months if they overdosed by accidents using unknown, right, oh, yes, sorry. So, yes, 14%. as I had alluded to on the earlier screen, and I have a hard time even reading it and saying it, but, you know, my son used to call me and say, I'm about to use something from an unreliable source. This is where I am. If you don't hear from me in 5 minutes, come and get me. A lot of our people who use now use with other people so that they have Narcan available or Naloxone to be able to revive people. So they talk about the overdose again, which is very important, which is information that now is being made public more and more. I believe Winnipeg's own harm reduction is starting to put their information out more about overdose deaths because we're the ones who know. I can safely say our community has had a lot of overdoses and a lot of near misses, and those are not recorded anywhere. This slide here, have you witnessed an overdose? 49% have said yes. That's out of our people that we polled. So they witness this all the time amongst themselves.
That was Kim Longstreet, a parent and resident of Brandon, Manitoba, speaking before her city council about harm reduction and Bill C-216 in the Canadian Parliament. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now, the sponsor of Bill C-216 is Gord Johns, a new Democrat member of Parliament for the federal electoral riding of Courtney Alberni in the House of Commons of Canada. He spoke about the toxic drug supply in the House of Commons on May 5th.
Today, Madam Speaker, the family and friends of 20 Canadians will get the life-changing news that their loved one has died because of a toxic drug poisoning. Tomorrow, the family and friends of another 20 Canadians will get the same news. And again the next day, and the next day, Madam Speaker. The Expert Task Force on Substance Use, established by Health Canada, accurately described what we are facing when it said the war on drugs has led to what ends up looking like a war on people who use drugs. People are dying every day. And the situation in Canada, already particularly deadly, is getting worse, not better. Canada has the fastest growing rate of overdose mortality in the world. This is from the government's own expert task force. The pandemic has accelerated the toxic drug supply crisis, and there is no end in sight. The Public Health Agency of Canada, in its most recent modeling, predicted that opioid-related deaths will remain high until June and may even increase. Yet this government has refused to take the necessary and urgent actions needed to stop the losses, including making investments the scale of this crisis requires, investments in addressing the root causes of problematic substance use, education and prevention, harm reduction and safer supply, and treatment on demand and recovery services. The fall economic update failed to even acknowledge the public health emergency that has been devastating communities for years. And the 2022 budget added a mere $100 million over 3 years to be spread across this country. That's 10 provinces and 3 territories, Madam Speaker. The stigma is not just in policy. It's not just in the laws in this country. It's in the amount of money this government spends to tackle this crisis. The toxic drug supply crisis, which has arisen as a direct result of the failed war on drugs, is not just costing lives. It's costing significant amounts of money to all levels of government. You've heard me speak repeatedly in this House that this is a health and this is a human rights issue. But, Madam Speaker, this is also an economic issue. Now, the expert task force wrote about the financial burden of the criminalized approach to drugs on the health and criminal justice system, saying, quote, criminalization leads to higher drug-related health costs because it keeps people who use drugs away from prevention and early treatment health services due to the fear of being arrested, labeled, or outed. And they cited further that criminalization drives people underground and means that people are less likely to seek assistance or have difficulties if they try to obtain assistance, because criminalization pushes people who use drugs to rely on an illegal, often contaminated drug supply, and it is responsible for high hospitalization costs. Again, it cited that 23,240 opioid-related and 10,517 stimulant-related poisoning hospitalizations occurred from January 2016 to September 2020 in Canada, excluding Quebec. In its second report, The expert task force put it bluntly, Madam Speaker, saying that, quote, current policies are currently costing Canada huge amounts.
Un rappel au règlement, l'honorable député de...
The honorable member for Pierre Bouget. I listened to my colleague's speech. I found it very interesting, very passionate. It's an interesting subject, but I'm not sure that it's completely in line with C8's content. Perhaps I've misunderstood. Maybe I misunderstood his speech, if I understand correctly.
Member will get there in his speech.
Yes. I guess this is, again, the problem here in this House, Madam Speaker. We've got four political parties that are official parties. We've got a fifth party in the Green Party. And when parties don't recognize that when we have had 27,000 people die in this country in the last 6 years, that this isn't an issue that should be addressed in the fall economic statement. It has killed more people than COVID-19, yet COVID-19 responses are in this budget. So absolutely, this is a fall budget issue because it's missing in this document. It's missing in the funding. It's missing in the response from this government. So I'm disappointed to hear my colleague not think this isn't an issue that should be responded to in the fall economic update. So, Madam Speaker, I'm going to go back to my speech if I could. Current policies are currently costing Canada huge amounts of money. In 2017, the estimate of healthcare costs in Canada related to the use of opioids and other depressants and cocaine and other stimulants was $1 billion. And the cost of policing and legal proceedings related to drug possession exceeded $6 billion. These are in 2017 numbers. Yes, this is relevant to the fall economic statement. The task force recommended providing sufficient and ongoing funding to address the issue and stated that, quote, although a significant initial investment will be required to reshape the system and address the drug toxicity crisis, costs can now be expected to decrease over time as the impact of new, more efficient policies is felt. That there are societal costs to problematic substance use is not news, Madam Speaker. In 2014, in the report of the Blue Ribbon Panel of Crime Reduction prepared for the British Columbia provincial government wrote, quote, clearly, substance abuse is an expensive societal issue. Drug treatment is also an expensive enterprise. This raises the immediate question as to whether treatment is worth the cost. According to the U.S. National Institute on Drug Abuse, every dollar invested in addiction treatment programs yields a return of $4 and $7 in reduced drug-related crime, criminal justice costs, and theft. When savings related to health care are included, total savings can exceed costs by a ratio of 12 to 1. End quote. This is an economic issue. This was an opportunity missed in the fall economic update. The report recommended that quality mental health and addiction services be made more accessible, finding that evidence suggests such investments would lead to significant future savings. An economic issue should have been addressed in the fall economic statement. Beyond these health and justice system costs, there are less visible costs to communities from the war on drugs. These costs are something I've heard a great deal about as I traveled the country to learn about the toxic drug supply crisis and speak about my private member's bill. Madam Speaker, I've been on a tour, Stop the Harm tour, listening to people from Victoria, Duncan, Nanaimo, Edmonton last week, Saskatoon, Toronto. I was in Montreal today in my colleague's home province, listening to the frontline people. I hope he does the same. Because they'll tell him it's an economic issue as well as a human rights and a health issue. From Halifax, I hear the same thing, Madam Speaker. And, you know, I was talking to Jean-Francois Marie at Cactus Montreal today. He cited that as someone who gets HIV, costs $35,000 a year to get their medicine. Someone with Hep C costs about $75,000. So when he says we get $250,000 in funding from the province, but we don't get any federal funding, it doesn't make any economic sense that we're not investing in harm reduction, who just got her funding pulled from the province of Saskatchewan. They need federal funding, Madam Speaker. And, you know, I could go on a lot, but I'm going to just try to go right to the fact that we need empathy right now. We need to listen to the people. We need to open our hearts on this issue. It is an economic issue, Madam Speaker. It is a human issue as well. And, you know, I listened to Isabelle Fortier this morning, Mom Stopped the Harm, when I was at Dopamine in Montreal. She talked about her daughter Sarah Jane, who was studying law at the University of Ottawa. She got into depression. She started using substances to cope with it. Madam Speaker, she died 600 meters from a hospital from a preventable overdose. She wanted to volunteer at Amnesty International, Greenpeace, the Red Cross. She lost her dreams. And one thing I've seen from coast to coast to coast is in the eyes of the people that are struggling the most on this crisis that they have in common. They have fear. They're scared. They're scared that where they're going to sleep. They're scared where they're going to eat. They're scared they're going to die of drug poisoning. They're scared they're never going to be whole again to be with their families and their friends and loved ones. They're scared that their dreams are gone. And Madam Speaker, I'm calling on us all to have empathy. You know, Gandhi said, the true measure of any society can be found in how it treats its most vulnerable citizens. I'm calling on us to be a leader so that we can show that we have courage, that we care about the most vulnerable, that we don't fail them, that we can unlock their dreams, Madam Speaker. It's good for the GDP. We have an opportunity. We can look to Portugal, who took a health approach instead of a criminal approach, where they're proud. They're proud of taking on a complex issue with a complex solution. They had courage. They didn't have fear, Madam Speaker. And it's good for their economy. So this is a fall economic update. It's been a fall economic update for 6 years. It's been a budget update for 6 years and failed opportunities. And I encourage us all to have the love and compassion and courage and make this issue a priority. All of us, we can dream to open up and unlock the dreams of the people that are dying right now by supporting them, by investing in them, by prioritizing them. We can do this, Madam Speaker. And I hope we'll all do that and stop letting people die unnecessarily.
Questions and comments. The Honourable Parliamentary Secretary to the Government, House Leader.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. I must say that I really appreciate the passion that this member has displayed today. And indeed, this is, I would agree with him, an extremely important issue. And, I really hope that we can see better funding coming forward and better action taken towards dealing with this serious crisis that we have. I'm wondering if he can relay to this House, you know, he talked about the tour that he's been on in support of his private members bill. What has he been hearing? What are some of the real life experiences and stories that he's been hearing from people as he's been touring around the country and what they're saying and what he thinks that they would want this House to know?
Well, member for Courtney Alberney.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Speaker. I think what they want is they want us to listen to the experts, listen to the evidence and the science. We have, Health Canada has created a task force on substance use. They make clear recommendations, which is reflected in my bill, C-216, the health-based response to substance use. They want to see us actually move forward, to look to other models around the world, to have courage, to not put votes ahead of people's lives. That's what they want us to hear. And Mom Stop the Harm, I encourage everybody in this House, it is Mental Health Week, it's built around empathy. Please listen to the moms, the experts, your chief medical health officer, talk to law enforcement. They will tell you that we are, by criminalizing people, we're just further harming people, and it doesn't work. It hasn't worked.
That was Gord Johns, a member of the Canadian Parliament, speaking before the House of Commons on May 5th. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. While we have time, let's hear a little more from that city council meeting in Brandon, Manitoba, and the presentation by local resident and parent Kim Longstreet. The first voice you hear will be that of city councillor Chris Desjarlais.
Well, Kim, that was like so much information, and so even though I've had a chance to look, I have not dived into all of it. But one of the things, and thank you for your presentation, obviously, but one of the things that I'm curious about is when you're surveying those marginalized individuals or folks struggling with this, Did you ask how many of them would seek treatment if it were available?
I can't remember if that's part of the...
Because I'd be interested in hearing that, because we hear that we're lacking treatment facilities, we're lacking detox centers, and I'm really curious to know how many users currently out there would be seeking those things out, but because they're not available, they're still waiting. Your son obviously is, and I'm not saying he's an exception, he was certainly one that was looking for it and wasn't able to access it. But I am curious how many of those are actually... You know, when we think about the stages of change, how many of them are actually ready for treatment and aren't able to access it? And if that's where we should be focusing, or if we should actually be focusing more on some of the harm reduction stuff that you presented today.
Yeah, so as somebody who has, we're well over 500 patrols with the Bear Clan. I'm almost 400 of those. And lots and lots and lots of conversations and wet shoulders from lots of tears. People just have given up. They've asked. The resources haven't been provided. They're on waiting lists, and they just don't care. They just give up. Like, it's like, this is my lot in life. This is what it's going to be for me. Nobody cares. Nobody's offering. You know, one of the hardest things for Bear Clan to see was when we all went into COVID shutdown, all of our people were out on the streets still with nowhere to go, no services, nothing. They felt abandoned by this city. So, have they asked? Should we be asking them if they would take treatment? Yes, they would take treatment if it was offered. If they didn't have to wait for 2 to 3 months to get into detox and then live detox to go to wait for 6 months to get into treatment, to get out of treatment, to wait for 5 months to get into sober living. Yeah, people have asked. People have asked, and people have asked and have died because they haven't been given support. On a quest into examiner, I am working on an inquest right now with somebody whose loved one died and shouldn't have died. The only one that I have been asked to work on them with, and I am going to see it through with them. And the reason that they have died is because the system failed them. And that's with all these overdose deaths. The system has failed. You can't tell me that all these people are addicted to something and have never wanted help and asked for it and at some point been refused. You get refused enough times, you just succumb to whatever the outcome will be. Yes, my son is an exception because he wanted treatment. He didn't want to be in that state. He wanted to play for the Toronto Raptors. That was his dream. He's never going to do it. He's 34 years old. 10 years of his life. Gone. How many times did he ask for help? How many times was he turned away from Ram Clinic? How many times did he go to the ER and have people treating him like he was? It's hurtful. It's hurtful for me, and it's hurtful for everybody who has to deal with that day after day after day. And yes, it is hard for me to talk about it. I'm embarrassed and ashamed sometimes with how my son has been treated, how everybody gets treated because they have an addiction. It's got to stop.
That was Kim Longstreet, a parent and resident of Brandon, Manitoba, speaking before her city council about harm reduction and Bill C-216 in the Canadian Parliament. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying
for
so
the
long.
Drug Truth Network,
so long.
This is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.